Welcome to Baylor Connections, a conversation series with the people shaping our future. Each week, we go in-depth with Baylor leaders, professors, and more, discussing higher education, research, student life, and other topics as part of our partnership with KWBU-FM. You can find this show and others archived online, baylor.edu/connections. I'm Derek Smith, and our guest on Baylor Connections today is Dr. Byron Johnson. Dr. Johnson is the Distinguished Professor of Social Sciences at Baylor University, founding director of the Institute for the Studies of Religion, and director for the Program for Pro-Social Behavior. He's recognized as a leading scholar in the scientific study of religion, criminology, the effectiveness of faith-based organizations, criminal justice, and more. Dr. Johnson's research has covered topics such as the impact of faith-based programs on offender treatment and recidivism, how faith impacts behaviors such as volunteerism, generosity, and purpose, and he's written many books and articles and serves on a number of prestigious faculty and advisory boards. Dr. Johnson, welcome to Baylor Connections. We're pleased to have you here today.
Thanks, Derek. Good to be with you.
A lot of people may know ISR, as we can call it in shorthand, for some of the surveys on religion and public life that come out. We've done stories on those here on KWBU-FM in the past, and those are an important part of what you do, but they're far from the only part. You came here in 2004 to found Baylor Institute for the Studies of Religion. Take us back a little bit to the history of that founding, why it was founded here, and a little more broadly what you do.
Well, you know, I was at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia before coming to Baylor, where I led a center there dedicated to the scientific study of religion. And Penn, of course, is it's a Ivy League institution, but it's certainly not faith-friendly. But even there, there was an interest in the role that religion does or does not play in society. And it was there that I began to be recruited by Baylor to come and start a center kind of like the one that I was leading at Penn. And, you know, my initial response was, I don't know that I'd be interested in leaving the Ivy League to come to Baylor, but the more I heard about the vision of Baylor, you know, as a faith-based institution, one that could kind of rally behind the research that we're doing, instead of being at a place where they didn't necessarily like the kind of work that I was doing. So it became something that became very attractive to me. And so I did come, and of course, Baylor has not disappointed. They've been very supportive and have allowed us to grow the center into, you know, quite an operation now where we have a number of scholars from many different disciplines who study religion. So it's not just a number-crunching social scientist like myself, but we have historians and others. We have an epidemiologist that studies the role of religion in health. So there are so many different ways in which you can study religion, and our center is dedicated to doing that in a way that brings recognition for the role that religion plays, which is often overlooked, especially in the academy, and we want to change that.
What does the scientific study of that look like? You know, we talk about, you know, some of the surveys, you know, some of the work, research work you've done on, you know, the impact of faith communities on, you know, maybe people who are in prison or people reacclimating from prison. So much of that seems like it could be anecdotal. Well, hey, here's a program that's doing great things. What does the empirical scientific study of this, how do you do that, quantify these things?
Yeah. Well, you know, we did a study this last spring, for example, on the response to homelessness. And this is a topic that you hear about quite a bit. You know, so many people homeless in America. What do you do about it? And we have an entire federal agency in Washington dedicated to addressing homelessness called Housing and Urban Development. And but yet there's next to no research on the role that faith may play. And so we were contacted by a foundation that was interested in the response to homelessness. You know, what is the faith community doing? And we went to 11 different cities across the country, and we surveyed. We actually used federal data that was available from Housing and Urban Development to look at the response to homelessness. Plus, we did interviews on the ground. And to make a long story short, we found that about 60% of the beds that are provided by faith-based groups.
Wow.
But yet no one really knows these kinds of things. And so it's that kind of empirical data that you think, okay, so if the faith community is responding to homelessness in that kind of a way, does that have an impact on how government works or doesn't? And so that's just one way of many ways of looking at something that you can measure. So we were looking at beds. How many beds are provided by faith-based organizations? And we didn't even look at congregations. We just looked at Gospel Rescue Missions and the Salvation Army and organizations that you would be familiar with. There's actually a bigger response than we could even measure. So the response to disasters, this is something that's yet to be studied. But anyone that's actually been to a disaster scene knows full well that the response is largely faith-based, not by the government. And so these are kinds of things that ISR, for example, tries to shed empirical light on, because I think it actually helps policymakers and others understand, religion is it's something that just doesn't happen in the pews on Sundays or on the weekends, but these people that are motivated out of faith actually do a lot of good work that we should pay attention to, because it might make a difference in our social lives and in our economy. And a colleague of mine did a major paper this last year showing that faith matters about $1.2 trillion annually to our U.S. economy. And that may, in fact, have been a conservative estimate.
We are talking to Dr. Byron Johnson, Distinguished Professor of the Social Sciences and Founding Director of the Institute for the Studies of Religion. When you talk about the Institute for the Studies of Religion, you've done a good job sort of setting up some of the questions that you're seeking to answer. But do you have – is there a mission statement of sorts or a broad foundational question that you're trying to answer with the work you and your many disciplinary colleagues do there?
Yeah. We do have a mission statement. I won't read it. It's typically academic jargony, but basically it says that we want to bring all the resources that we have from all of our different disciplines, from history, political science, psychology, sociology, economics. How can we bring these disciplinary perspectives to help us understand something that can really be pretty complicated? I mean, why is it that people of faith people who practice their faith every day live longer and happier lives, more productive? That's a stunning finding. Even if mortality rates and depression and suicide are affected by the presence or absence of faith, that's something worth knowing. And so for what we feel like religion should be treated as a topic that's important. And the reality is within the academic community, it's not treated that way. That's why we're behind on the research. That's why I started studying religion, because I grew up as a person of faith. And I was kind of surprised that when I started doing graduate work in the area of criminology, there was no research on religion. I thought, well, that's kind of odd. I know so many people volunteer to help offenders. Why isn't there any research on it? And so it's because so many of our disciplines are dominated by people of very little faith or no faith. So for them, why would faith matter? It doesn't make any sense that it would matter. And so, in fact, when we do these studies, it causes a lot of people to scratch their heads. You've got to be joking. Religion's important. I had no idea that the absence of religion could be a risk factor for somebody. And so we're basically trying to change the way people think about religion, but to do so in a way that the data kind of shows the right path forward.
You know, I was going to ask you what kind of the broader response was from the academic community, but you just described that. What's the response you get from maybe the media and from consumers of media? Because I feel like just watching, you know, whether you release the survey, there is interest out there in what you're doing.
There's a lot of interest, and I think that sometimes, there's surprise. But then when they look at the data, it's kind of hard to argue with. But then again, what you find from some people, I know we did one study where we found that 55% of Americans have had an experience with a guardian angel. And these are, we didn't hand select the religious to answer that question. This is the American public at large. And so off camera, a reporter said to us that she had been protected by a guardian angel herself. So, typically she probably wouldn't have been that forthcoming, but now here's research that actually supports something that happened in her own life. So you get that kind of reaction too, along with the people that are kind of surprised that these effects could actually be so significant. And so, You can't do too much research, though. That's why you don't want to do one or two or three studies. You want to build an entire field that maybe doesn't even exist. And so that's kind of what we're trying to do for religion.
We are talking to Dr. Byron Johnson here on Baylor Connections. Dr. Johnson, founding director of the Institute for the Studies of Religion and distinguished professor of the social sciences here at Baylor University. Now, you mentioned criminology, your background in criminology. You've done extensive research on the intersection of faith and criminology. Which kind of came first for you? Was it criminology, studying criminology, that came first? And then you mentioned you started wondering about the impact of faith and didn't find a lot out there.
Yeah, both. I mean, as a grad student, I was, looking to see if there was anything written on faith that I could actually study. And I remember when I told my major professor I wanted to look at the role of religion in the lives of prisoners, he was like, "Why would you want to do something like that?" And I said, "Well, there's nothing written on the topic." And he goes, "Well, maybe that's a good enough reason to do it right there." Because I knew that faith had the power to transform a life. And I had certainly seen instances of where that had happened. And so that led me on a journey of doing research in the area of crime, and that was back in the mid-'80s. Now, fast forward 30 years, there's hundreds and hundreds of studies on this topic, and I've had a good role to play in that because a lot of people have tried to replicate research that we have done. And that's led other scholars to study this, too. And many of them are people of no faith at all, but they're finding the similar kinds of patterns. And that is, of course, that if one is an actively religious person, you're much less likely to get into trouble, less likely to become an addict, less likely to wind up in prison, for sure, even if you come from places that put you at risk. So that led me to look at, a bunch of other studies. And, we've studied faith-based drug treatment. We've studied faith-based prison programs. And the ones that we have studied, it's remarkable the role that faith can play in terms of bringing someone, straightening out a life, straightening out an addict, helping someone stay sober. Our most recent studies on drug addiction, by the way, show that while faith is important, it's really... it doesn't do the whole thing. But what really happens is when people give their life away in service to other people, they help other addicts. They find God, help other addicts. That's the ticket to sobriety. And it's the kind of life it's a scripture. You find your life by giving your life away. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're finding with addicts, and it's what we're finding with prisoners as well. Prisoners who find God and then serve other prisoners are the ones that really do change their lives around. And what we find is they get a new identity. And so we're writing a lot in the last couple of years on identity transformation.
We are talking to Dr. Byron Johnson, and you participated in conjunction with President Livingstone's inauguration last October in a symposium on human flourishing. Mm-hmm. And it seems like in a lot of ways what you're doing is how does religion, or maybe in some cases how does it not, but on the whole, how does religion contribute to human flourishing, whether it's criminology, like you said, whether it's drug abuse or other different areas. But I want to talk about one of your recent books, The Angola Prison Cemetery, The Angola Prison Seminary. Mm-hmm. You think of the Louisiana State Penitentiary, almost the antithesis of the phrase human flourishing, at least from the outside. Yeah. And yet you found a very unique setup there that you did a pretty major research project on. Take us inside Angola a little bit, mm-hmm. the background and why there was a need to try something pretty radical there.
Yeah, Angola, the Louisiana State Penitentiary is located on the grounds of a former plantation called Angola, where the slaves were actually from Angola, Africa. And it's 18,000 acres. It's sprawling with a number of camps, prison camps, within this large complex. And so for many, many decades, it's been known as probably the worst prison in America. Corrupt, violent. The guards were as bad as the inmates. Violent, stabbing deaths all the time. And the Louisiana sentencing laws are so punitive that these guys are largely serving life, and we're talking over 6,000. So it's past is ugly, But about 25 years ago, a warden went there. This is not like a destination job. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do? And he had this idea of starting a Bible college in the seminary to see if it could bring something positive, because most of the programs there were non-existent. So it's like, what are you going to do for these offenders who are serving life? And so he started a Bible college, and not long after that, a lot of people started hearing these reports that this prison has beginning to change. I had heard some of this through the grapevine myself. But the warden actually contacted ISR and said, look, I know you do research on crime, and, you know, we've had some great success here. This was about 7 years ago. And but people don't give us credit for what's happening here. And I don't know why that's the case. I said, well, you need data. You know, it's one thing to have a testimonial. It's another thing to be able to prove a point. And so to make a long story short, we wrote a proposal. We got it funded to do a 5-year longitudinal study at Angola and also Darrington, which is a prison here in Texas that's based on the Louisiana State Penitentiary model. And, you know, we had a research team of 5 people dedicated to just that project. And so we did hundreds of interviews with the inmates, with the staff, with volunteers, and just spent an enormous amount of time observing. And, you know, what we found was pretty remarkable, and that is that the guys that go to the Bible college and participate in the Bible college and then complete the Bible college, they kind of become missionaries in the institution itself. And so we tracked them. They also have something else there called congregations. These are inmate-led church congregations that the prison allows to take place. This is another experiment. It doesn't exist anywhere else. So there are 29 active congregations, Baptist, Presbyterian, Lutheran, Pentecostal, Catholic. And they have clergy, pastors, associate pastors, deacons.
Real organization, too.
And I mean real buildings. And full-blown ministries. So they have a hospice ministry. They have benevolence ministries. They do counseling, grief counseling, because so many of these people, since they're serving life, they're not getting out. A, they're dying in there, and their families are dying while they're in there. Who does the funerals for inmates who die, who are serving life? The inmates do.
Wow.
And so as we studied these congregations, what we found was that even if you don't go to the Bible college, but you regularly participate in a congregation and the ministries of those congregations, it helps you tremendously stay out of trouble and do what we call pro-social things. So and it's not just avoiding harmful things, but what causes people to do good things, the pro-social side, not the antisocial side. And so, you know, we found at Angola that it was those two things, attending the Bible college, attending the congregations, and serving the others, that really was the magic there. So now people from all over the world, believe it or not, head to backward Louisiana mm-hmm. to see what's happening there, because a lot of prisons are experiencing real problems, overcrowding conditions, cutting their budgets, no programs, what do we do? And so they're going to the most unlikely of places to find that out. And so our research is kind of helping to give them, you know, empirical data to go along with what they see in person.
And if you'd like to know more about that, you can check out Dr. Johnson's book, The Angola Prison Seminary. Also, a lot of these themes about criminology, the intersection of faith and crime in your book, More God, Less Crime, just two of the many, many books and articles that you've written or edited or contributed to. You know, you mentioned that they participate in more pro-social behavior. We talk about the fact that faith-based communities provide in some of these cities 60% of beds to the homeless. But what's the why behind all that? As you found, I think, you know, as people of faith, we recognize that people of faith are working toward building towards something bigger, you know, answering to something higher. But why do you see this working in a place like Angola, for instance?
Sure. Well, you know, let's face it, a lot of this work is really hard. Mentoring prisoners are helping them to learn how to read and write. This is not necessarily fun for people to do, but they feel called to do it. And they're miserable if they don't. So, you know, if you look at organizations like Big Brothers and Big Sisters, sometimes it's one step forward, two steps back. But these mentors keep coming. And, you know, this is why when you look at volunteerism, and one of the things that people want to talk about this day and age is social capital. Even Bob Putnam, Mr. Social Capital, now readily admits that half of all social capital is found within houses of worship. It's spiritual capital.
And, Bowling Alone.
And he wrote the book Bowling Alone. And so he's also written a book called American Grace, where he's now begun to look at religion seriously as this important variable that helps us understand why, yes, social capital is important, but why is it that people do trustworthy things? Why is it that people help others in need? And for many of them, it's out of a compelling that comes from faith. They're motivated to do these things. This is why when you see a natural disaster, people drive from all over the country. Often many of those people only do it out of sheer compelling from faith. If you ask them, they're called to do this, and they respond. And they do so with their treasures, too. Mm-hmm. If you look at giving, a lot of giving is because of people are motivated out of faith to give. And not only here, but around the world. So if you're looking at generosity and volunteerism, faith's a big, people are going to miss a big factor if they're not looking at that dimension. And so that's what we're trying to do here at Baylor, is to make sure that we're contributing to that knowledge. And, it's completely consistent with our mission at Baylor. And because we're faith-based, it kind of actually helps us understand how to approach the study a little bit more intelligently, we think, than people, let's say, who are studying faith from no background at all.
Well, Dr. Johnson, we're rapidly approaching the end of the program here, but we really appreciate this conversation today and looking forward to seeing, you know, people can find more of your work on the Baylor ISR website, baylor.edu/ISR, and we'll look forward to seeing what more you have for us in the future here.
Thanks, Derek. Look forward to it.
Thank you. Dr. Byron Johnson, Distinguished Professor of the Social Sciences and Founding Director of the Institute for the Studies of Religion at Baylor. This has been Baylor Connections. I am Derek Smith. You can hear this and other programs online, baylor.edu/connections. I want to say thanks to KWBU Station Manager Brody Bashaw and Cassie Bowers and Lori Fogelman of Baylor Marketing and Communications. Thanks for joining us for Baylor Connections on KWBU-FM.